Welcome to Pod to the Rescue, a podcast from Summit Dog Rescue in Boulder, Colorado.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Libby.
We're both professional dog trainers with multiple certifications in dog training and behavior. Together, we have more than two decades of experience in dog rescue.
We want to share everything we've learned along the way with other folks involved in dog rescue, sheltering, fostering, and adoption, and anyone who just loves dogs.
Rescuing the dog is just the first step.
We're here to help with everything that comes next. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to Pod to the Rescue. I'm Libby.
And I'm Emily.
And today we're bringing you an interview with Tiffany Baker of Boss Babe Dog Training. We spoke with Tiffany about training deaf dogs, which is one of her specialties. We recently had a deaf dog in our rescue. He was actually returned. And so we reached out to Tiffany. Emily found her through the Pet Professional Guild website, and she was an amazing help to us as we got Blue ready for his new forever home.
We loved talking to Tiffany. And as we learned more about training a deaf dog, we became more confident and we felt like we learned a lot of skills, and we wanted to share all that we learned with our listeners.
Hopefully this helps you feel a little more confident about taking a deaf dog into your rescue or fostering a deaf dog.
Or adopting a deaf dog. They're amazing.
Tiffany Baker is a certified canine behavior consultant, as well as the founder and owner of Boss Babe Dog Training. She has been professionally working with dogs and canine behavioral modification for over 7 years. Tiffany specializes in aggression with a focus on families with disabled pets. She is a licensed Family Paws parent educator, has received her title as a certified behavior consultant canine, a certified Control Unleashed instructor through Leslie McDevitt's program, and a certified family dog mediator through Kim Brophy's Applied Ethology Legs course. Tiffany Baker, welcome to Pod to the Rescue.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time.
We're really excited to have you here. I don't know how much our listeners follow our Summit Dog Rescue pages, but we had a deaf dog return to us in January of this year, and we found your webinar on deaf dogs, and it was completely priceless for our progress with this dog. So we're excited that you're here to talk about your work with deaf dogs and specifically ones that are in rescues and shelters.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so glad that you found the webinar helpful. There is definitely a need for just more resources out there.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think a lot of rescues are hesitant to take on deaf dogs because they don't quite know how to manage and train a deaf dog. And so We definitely just want to get a little more information out there and share how we helped Blue. So Emily, do you want to tell our listeners about Blue and his story?
Sure. I'll just do a brief little synopsis of Blue, which is he came into our rescue 5 years ago as an 8-month-old cattle dog mix. We didn't exactly know his breed, but once we got him, it became pretty evident that he was deaf. He went up to CSU and it was determined that he was deaf and had some visual impairment. But he was like very social and friendly and seemed like, you know, a resilient and flexible dog. So he was placed with a family in Denver who lived in a very hustling, busy city environment. We didn't do any research on deaf dogs that I know of. It just was kind of like, oh, he's doing great. This is a good home for him. They were very committed, amazing people. Fast forward 5 years, they had two children during the pandemic, and he just wasn't jiving with the children, and he would hide in the corner and growl. And it turned out also over those 5 years, he became very leash reactive, walking on urban streets to dogs, people, bicycles, the whole thing. So he was a really hard dog to get returned, even though he was a totally wonderful dog. And this time we were like, uh-oh, like, we really need to learn about deaf dogs and see where we went off the rails, you know, in placing him initially, and do everything we can to support him. And that was how we found your webinar, which was just really, really helpful for us.
So, like Emily said, you had a webinar in the Pet Professional Guild about using Leslie McDevitt's Control Unleashed program for deaf dogs. Can you tell us a little bit about that, about how you use Control Unleashed for deaf dogs?
Yeah. So I'm a certified Control Unleashed instructor, which really just means that I studied under Leslie McDevitt so that I can go out into the world and use the Control Unleashed patterns in the appropriate way. And so Control Unleashed is really all about providing a predictable framework for dogs while the world around them is so unpredictable. So there's various pattern games that are really helpful. And as I was going through my certification is when I had a leash reactive deaf dog that I had started working with. And I was like, how can I get a little bit creative with these patterns and turn them into something that is beneficial for this dog? And so I started to play around with some look at that, which is really just a way to communicate to the dog that there's something in their environment and that we notice it and we want to give them a heads up that it's there. So I worked on using various different visual cues in place of the auditory cues. And yeah, it turned into a pretty successful thing. And I posted videos while I was going through my certification, and Leslie McDevitt was like, this needs to be a thing. And so then she connected me with Nikki at Pet Professional Guild and got me in with them so that we could create a webinar around Deaf Dogs Unleashed is what we called it, so that that could be a resource available for everybody.
That's incredible. And it's awesome that you are able to share this with a wider audience. So is that how you became interested in helping deaf dogs, because of this one dog?
So not necessarily. I had worked with various deaf dogs and blind dogs throughout my career, but working with deaf dogs for me is like a way for me, like my creative juices just flow a little bit more. It kind of lights me up a little bit. And so I find it really enjoyable to work with deaf dogs so that I can get creative. And then that kind of led me into the Control Unleashed stuff.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit about the pattern games and why the framework of predictability is important for all dogs, and then specifically for deaf dogs?
Sure. So there's so many different pattern games. I wish that I could go through each and every one of them. But kind of the basis of a lot of the games are, one, creating a predictable framework so that the dog can begin to anticipate what's going to happen next rather than worry about the next step, right? So they know that step one is followed by step two is followed by step three, and they have rehearsed that, you know, pattern in low distraction areas. So then we can take that predictable framework into, you know, more distracting environments, and they have a point A, point B, point C. And they're not left kind of in the, I don't know what to do and I don't know what to expect, which is where, you know, that anxiousness, that anxiety kind of stems from. So for any dog, the Control Unleashed pattern games are really, really helpful. And especially for deaf dogs, because they're missing those auditory cues that hearing dogs get. And so because they're missing those auditory cues, things seem to startle them more, show up in their environment, and they don't notice those things. And then bam, it's there. And there's just a more pronounced startle response that I find, which then, you know, can produce to forms of reactivity. So,
That's what we found with Blue, was that for me, it was a huge learning process, because, you know, I do train dogs and foster all the time, but I'm so used to dogs having those auditory cues. So walking Blue, I could see him literally, before we found your program, getting startled. And I was like, how do I let him know that something's going on in the environment? And so first, one thing that was amazing was that you said, you know, automatic check-ins are gold for a deaf dog. And so when we walked, it was like, he was just checking in, checking in, checking in. So then I was already doing that before we found your program. So then it was easy for me to add in, like, one thing I loved from your program was the 1-2-3 game. I did the tactile, like on his side, if, you know, if that was appropriate, but I also for him just counted 1-2-3 with my fingers, like you were counting in front of a classroom or something for little kids. And he would look, he would do his initial check-in. And then if there were things going on, I could be like 1-2-3 and get past it. But then also I tried that look at that and like trying to alert him that like, there's a bike coming, and then a lot of find it's. But yeah, I love those. Those for us were really helpful. And then the up down was priceless. Can you talk a little bit about the up down?
Yes. So the up down is, I'm pretty sure every one of my clients knows what up down is because it's something that I teach everybody. It's super simple and easy for the learner, being the human or and the dog. So it's easy for both of them. So the way that it works is you place a treat on the ground, and then the moment the dog eats the treat and offers some sort of attention, I'm not worried about eye contact, just attention, then we place another treat on the ground, dog looks up, put another treat on the ground, dog looks up, put another treat on the ground. Really helpful in just building that offered engagement, but also a good gauge. So like when I go somewhere new with any dog, but especially with deaf dogs, I'll kind of start with that game. First, I'm offering food. Can you eat food? Okay, good. We can move on. And then can you eat food on the ground and then offer me your attention, or does your attention go to the environment? And if it comes back up to me, great. We can move on with that up down game. And then I can begin to ask more of you.
That's so interesting. While you were talking about that, I was remembering that Blue was very prone to trigger stacking. And that's where we use that. And do you find trigger stacking to be more common in deaf dogs? And do you use that up down to try to gauge so that you don't have trigger stacking?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know that they're necessarily more prone to it, but definitely there are more opportunities for triggers to arise for them, right? And yeah, I do. I'll use it as a gauge, but also you bring up a good point because I'll also use it if I'm wanting to kind of bring down that arousal level. So just to get them focused on something that is repeatable, that is predictable, and it just gets them back into a thinking brain. So like maybe they had a reaction and we're redirecting them. I might go, you know, off the side and start doing up down just to get them back into a lower arousal state so that we can be more successful.
So it's almost like going to yoga class and relaxing on your mat, and you're like, okay, I know what we're doing here. I know a bike just went by and it really startled me, but we're back in the yoga class and it's okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I did want to also touch on, because you brought up the 1-2-3, and I just want to make sure that everybody is aware of what that is. So when it comes to the 1-2-3 game, there's different variations of it, but the variation that you were talking about is we use a tactile cue for deaf dogs, but let me explain how it is for hearing dogs. So for hearing dogs, we will just teach them that at the count of 3, 1-2-3 equals a piece of food delivered in a specific spot, usually right by my side. And we teach them that just like anything in a low distraction environment. So we teach them that, that 3 is a predictor of a piece of food coming. So what happens is when you begin the count of 1-2-3 at the beginning, at that 1, they are like ready because they know what's going to happen at that 3. So it's a really helpful pattern to get from, like you were saying, point A to point B, to get past something, when you need to be moving through something, but you want to keep them kind of engaged with you and in that predictable mindset. So the way that we altered that for our deaf dogs was to use a tactile cue. And so you just kind of will tap on the side, middle of the back, other side. And that was kind of their 1, 2, 3. Or as you were saying, you were using your fingers to count 1, 2, 3. So many different ways that you can use that visual or tactile kind of cues in order to create that same pattern.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little tall, so it was hard for me always to be like bending down and yeah.
I would love to hear more about tactile cues for deaf dogs in general, because for me, I don't like, it's kind of drilled into my brain to try not to touch the dog. Don't touch the dog, you know? And so that's something that I have to wrap my head around. Can you help us out?
Yeah, absolutely. So with tactile cues, I am very particular about who I'm using tactile cues on, because with our deaf dogs, they can also get startled very easily. So we want to make sure that it's not something that they're averse to first. So that's kind of the first thing. If I notice that there's a sensitivity to being touched, then I'm probably not going to use a tactile cue. And I'll just get creative with something different. But if I'm noticing the dog doesn't have those same sensitivities, then, it's just similar to, the way that you would count in 1, 2, 3, it just kind of gives them it's very kind of, I guess, specific in the placement of it. And we're teaching it outside of the context of our walk too. So it's not at a time where they're, you know, focused on triggers or high alert. We're practicing it inside of the home and kind of teaching them what those are a predictor of, so that it's not something that is aversive to those dogs. Does that make sense? Did that answer your question?
Totally, it does. So yeah, okay. It's not something that you're just springing on the dog while you're out on a walk. It's something you've introduced them to, perhaps even desensitized them to, before it becomes the pattern game.
Correct. Yes.
So when Blue first arrived, it was super hard for me to transition to be someone who talked a lot to the dogs, and I do the Kim Brophy Mr. Rogers hack, which is like you narrate the environment for your dog, like they're a, you know, toddler. And then I had Blue and I kept on narrating or talking to him and then being like, oh my God, why am I talking to him? And like really being awkward and like really feeling dopey. And one huge thing that brought me relief was that you said, talk to your dogs. Don't be weird. That was your exact. So can you talk to that a little bit? Cause it was really helpful for me. And I think it really changed the dynamic, because I was like constantly catching myself, like, which I'm sure for him, he's like, why is that human continually like being awkward?
Totally. It is. I talk to my deaf dogs, or when I'm working with deaf dogs, I find that if you actively try not to talk to your deaf dog, that it is weird to them. I think that it distorts our body language and things maybe aren't communicated as clearly. Dogs, I mean, they're not going to be able to hear the things that you're saying, which is fine, because they can read your body language and they can pretty much pick up on those little cues of things that you're trying to communicate. And it just looks more authentic, I think. I think it's less awkward, and the dog is less like, what's going on with that lady?
Yeah. Permission to talk to your deaf dog, I think, is a really big one, or at least it was for me. I was so grateful to you for that.
Yeah, good.
Well, and maybe something to bring up here as well is that there's a, when we say a dog is deaf, there's a range there. Am I correct? And that, you know, a dog could be deaf and still have some kind of hearing and maybe able to understand some patterns of our speech. And if we're being awkward and interrupting ourselves and interrupting this pattern, that is more unpredictable, which is important.
Yeah. And that's especially so for like are senior dogs that are kind of gradually losing their hearing. Because it's not normal for them to see you make those awkward movements or stop yourself like that. It's not going to hurt anything to talk to your deaf dog. And if anything, it will make things a little bit easier as you kind of move through building that communication with a deaf dog.
Okay, so moving away from the pattern games for a second, I did want to talk to you a little bit about recall, because this was one other thing that we were questioning and struggling with, and I would love your thoughts and opinions on it. You know, everyone seems to want recall, and the leash was so hard for Blue, whereas off leash, he actually had really quite good skills. And so initially, when we first got him, I was like, well, maybe we could like consider some off-leash stuff. And I ordered one of those non-shocking buzzer collars for him. It was called like the pet hat or something like that. And then once it came and I looked at it, I just like for multiple reasons, we decided never to do it, especially because he was like prone to startle. We thought if you're already prone to startling and then all of a sudden something's like buzzing on your neck and you can't get it off, that might feel weird. But that was specific to Blue. So I was just curious, since you're, you know, quite an expert on deaf dogs, what do you recommend for recall? He had a great hand wave, but we didn't feel good about that because if he didn't turn back to see us wave, he would just be running off. So we did on leash for him in long lines.
Yeah. And I think that it's definitely on a case by case basis as far as using some sort of tool like that. I personally, I found that I've not needed to recommend a vibration type collar. But I have known, you know, other colleagues that have conditioned dogs to be comfortable with that. And maybe dogs that are not quite so sensitive to that startle, to that touch, or to that feeling. And that does kind of become more of a cue versus something that is, you know, an aversive punishment of some sort. So usually when I'm working on recall with a deaf dog, I kind of do it in tiers. So the first thing that I want to do is really build up offered voluntary check-ins, like you were talking about earlier. So that really just means I am feeding them heavily every time they give me any sort of attention. And the more that you do that, the more they pay attention to you, right? I also find that most deaf dogs don't want to stray very far from the person that they get a majority of their cues from. So I would use long lines, and that's fine. And then I would also teach, if the dog is within, you know, a certain range from me, I would teach the dog to be able to reorient to me with a little like tap on the side of their hip, just to get them to turn around to me. And then I could cue them visually. And so I'm doing the voluntary check-ins. I'm teaching them a tactile reorient to me. And then taking that out, using a long lead, I just find that I'm not needing to actually physically call them. And I find that too with my hearing dogs as well, as long as I'm not putting them in a situation where there's like a ton of wildlife and stuff like that, which I wouldn't recommend. But as long as we're, you know, out somewhere the dog is familiar with, I find that the dog is just checking in frequently, and they're coming back to me frequently, and I'm feeding them a lot generously. I also like to pair them with a hearing dog that is really, really good at recall, and that seems to help. I had a deaf dog foster that I had, an Aussie, and we would go hiking off leash with my border collie, who is great at checking in with me, and they were like the best of friends. So he kind of always fought, they followed each other. So anytime Theo, my border collie, would come back, Tanner, the Aussie, would also come back. And so then I would be feeding them too. But I also like to be in a place where the environment is visually open, so that there's not many obstructions. When they do kind of glance back at me, I'm able to give that visual cue. But I do keep a long leash on them probably always. Yeah.
So on the subject of having another dog in the home, do you find, I know that every dog's an individual, of course. So the answer, as always, is it depends. But in general, do you find that having a hearing dog in the household helps deaf dogs?
I think so. I think that then it becomes not just the person that's providing the dog with these extra visual cues, but the other dog as well. And this goes the same dog that I had that I was talking about doing the off-leash hikes with my border collie. He stayed with me for about a week. And it was interesting because when my border collie or my other two dogs would like alert bark to something, you would see him also alert bark to those things because he recognized that they were barking and then he would join in. So that group behavior still exists. And yeah, so I do think it can be really helpful. I also think that it can be harmful if the dog that they're paired with does have more, you know, anxiety or fear-based behaviors, because then that's probably something that's going to startle them a lot, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that very much makes sense. Initially, that first placement in Denver, that dog that he was placed with had anxiety. Mm-hmm. And I think that did, you know, probably contribute, we'll never know, to him, you know, not being super successful in a super urban environment.
Urban environments are hard. Well, for any dog, but especially for deaf dogs, because things just show up out of nowhere and it's happening all the time, anytime they go out of the home. So that's hard. Yeah.
One thing I did when I had Blue was we started walking at night. And I was at first really scared that that would be really scary for him because now you don't have as much visual and he was already somewhat visually impaired, but he loved it. He had some of his best walks at like 9 and 10 PM because no one was out.
That.
Yeah. And he could just sniff and enjoy. And we weren't both like looking all the time.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I find with our deaf dogs that they can become overwhelmed with all of the visual cues happening around them. So I'm sure walking him in the evening where he's not really having to pay attention to all of these things and he can just focus on sniffing and relaxing and decompressing, I'm sure that was helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. We actually contemplated getting him a calming cap because of what you just said, that overstimulated by all the visual, because I'm in a semi-suburban environment. I tried to pick my daytime times when people weren't out, but you know, people are always
so
out.
Hard.
So hard. It's so hard.
What about kids? With Blue specifically, we found he really struggled with the unpredictable nature of kids. How can you help deaf dogs who are struggling in a similar way?
Kids are hard. For a lot of dogs, right? Because they are so unpredictable. They're, you know, running around, then they're sleeping, then they're jumping up and down. There's just not the same predictability that your average adult gives on a day-to-day. So I think that sometimes deaf dogs aren't a candidate for certain family homes. And I think it is just like always, it depends on how resilient that deaf dog is and how, and also kind of the ages of the children in the home, right? So if we have children that are at an age where they can take part in some of the things that we're teaching the dog, that can be really helpful, just including the children and the best way to interact with the dog in the home, and also setting really, really clear boundaries for the dog and the child. So things like the dog has a respected bubble and we don't pop that bubble, especially if he's sleeping or chewing on something, anything like that. If he's in his bubble on his bed, we don't go into that, into his bubble. So like teaching something like that is helpful, and also helping the dog make choices that don't put him in a sticky situation. So some dogs will like to just lie in the middle of the floor, but if we know that the kids are going to be running around in the middle of the floor, we might suggest that the dog lay off to the side, right? So helping the dog, putting them in situations where they can be the most successful.
Yeah. Management, I think, we talk a lot about management, and I think in this instance, it's doubly important, you know, and there might be times when the dog would be happier, you know, in another room with the door closed with a nice chew rather than, you know, being with the kids with their friends over and the noise and the hustle and bustle.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you think is the number one skill you would start working on when teaching a newly rescued deaf dog?
Offered attention. That's the number one thing. Is I want the dog to know that checking in with me gets them paid, and it gets them paid well. And so that's the number one skill that I would want to teach a deaf dog in my home.
I love that. That was definitely what I found to be the best skill for him. And he loved it. And I would do a little thumbs up every time he looked. And he was such a special dog. I can't even say how special he was.
And I think it probably, you bring up a good point, mentioning kind of those visual marker cues, right? So you were giving Blue a thumbs up. Some people will use a hand flash or a starfish, which really just means your hand going from a fist and your fingers flicking out. Sometimes that's a little bit quicker for a lot of people versus the thumbs up. It just depends. But it's a marker, just like a clicker, just like a verbal, yes, it is a, you did the thing, good job. And then I'll also use different visual cues for like praise, right? So I might do like a double thumbs up dance or a yay with my hands. So something like that, that lets them know that they did a good job, but maybe not a marker cue.
Listeners, Tiffany just gave us like some jazz hands to describe what she was doing for the dog. So just in case that's helpful.
One thing we haven't brought up, but it just came into my mind, was do you ever use aversives or punishment to let a deaf dog or any dog know that they're doing it wrong and getting it wrong? Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah. And it's interesting that you say that, because that's probably the number one thing that people are concerned about when they have a deaf dog, is not being able to tell them no, not being able to communicate that. And I don't teach any sort of like no cue, or because it doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? It no doesn't give the dog any information. So if the dog is doing something that is undesirable in that moment, I'm going to work more on redirecting the dog and then thinking, how can I arrange the environment in a way that's going to have the dog make a better choice? Are there certain skills that I need to instill for the dog to be more successful in this situation? So less focused on telling the dog, no, you're wrong, and more focused on, this is what I want you to do in this situation.
I like that. It's kind of, if you're already uncomfortable seeing bicyclists giving you a leash correction when you bark, doesn't help you feel better about that. And it doesn't teach you any skills that you should do instead.
So as we mentioned earlier at the beginning of the episode, deaf dogs in rescue are not uncommon at all for a multitude of reasons. What other suggestions do you have for anyone considering adopting or fostering a deaf dog?
Yeah, I would probably say that, I'm sure that you guys talk about, or most people that are in rescue or fostering dogs know a lot about decompression, right? So just providing the dog a space, a time period in order to acclimate to their new environment, which is oftentimes shocking for many dogs. So especially with our deaf dogs, that decompression period, I think, is even more important, so that they can have a chance to acclimate, to understand the environment that they're in, to kind of pick up on the new visual cues. I think also providing a nice predictable routine is helpful. So that the dog can anticipate what's going to happen next. And having the deaf dog have their own little space that they can be in. So if you need to be doing stuff that might startle the deaf dog, we might say, let's have you go into your safe space here, give you a chew or a lick mat. And, you know, and then that way they're not being triggered by some of the things that you're doing around the house.
Those are great suggestions.
That extended decompression time seems really important, especially for a dog who is already might be more prone to being startled or just isn't quite going to adjust as quickly as maybe a hearing dog would.
Right. Yeah. And they're getting used to those new smells and the new visuals and their new home and trying to determine what visual cues are a predictor of what things are about to happen. So yeah, it just takes them. I just find it to be definitely just more helpful for a deaf dog to have that period to acclimate for sure.
That makes sense. We talk a lot about letting your dog know that they're safe. And I would imagine that if you were hearing impaired, it would even take longer to know that you were safe.
Yeah. Yeah. For some. Time. Yeah, definitely. And just like we've said probably several times throughout this episode, that it always depends.
Yeah.
I had recently a deaf dog that I was working with who, came from living on the streets with a homeless person. And this was probably the most resilient deaf dog that I've ever worked with. I think just so used to going from place to place to place that it was just easier for that particular dog to acclimate to new spaces. But it was really interesting to watch that dog just switch to a new environment with such confidence that I'd not really seen working with a dog.
Yeah. And I almost wonder, was that dog successful in the environment of, you know, moving around so much because he was a little less predisposed to anxiety and that, right. You know, also had that going for him.
Yeah, totally. It's so hard to say, but it definitely was interesting.
One thing I did realize is Blue was with me when fireworks started to happen. And that was a perk because my Pyrenees does not like the fireworks and Blue did not notice the fireworks. So there were a few little perks like sirens, you know, things you'd be like, oh no, is the fire engine going to be a problem? But as long as it was far enough away, he didn't hear it. So
yeah. No, definitely perks of having a deaf dog, being it once they're asleep, you're kind of able to do more things than you would a dog that can hear you. But I think that also brings up a good point as far as when deaf dogs are sleeping, that they are more likely to be startled by that physical touch when they are asleep. So usually some of the kind of if I need to wake up a deaf dog, which if you don't need to, don't do it, right? Just let them rest. But if you need to wake up your deaf dog, you might try using some like olfactory cues, like having a really stinky treat and kind of waving it near them, right? You might even gently blow to try to gently wake them up. I'm usually going to try to avoid touching their body and trying to wake them up in as gentle as possible way.
I even once saw a TikTok video of someone, I think kind of across the room, gently stomping on the floor to like create some vibrations. Is that an option or would you not recommend that?
It can be, it varies from environment to environment, right? And the flooring that you have. I find that many flooring, it's really difficult to get those vibrations. Like carpet's not going to work, concrete's not going to work, right? Maybe if you have wood floors, but it's less likely to be as successful.
When I would come home and Blue would be asleep on the couch, he would mostly be asleep when I came in. And then I did feel like the motion of my dog and maybe even the pressure change in the air would wake him up, and he would just like wake up gleefully excited that I was home. But yeah, it was amazing how he had, it seemed like his other senses were more in tune to the environment, because things like air pressure did seem to affect him.
Yeah, they have to, I think, be more in tune to those things, right? I've had clients use lights as well to help wake up a deaf dog, or just to give them like a cue that something's about to happen. So I had a client where whenever somebody would arrive to their home, they would turn on the entryway light just to let the dog know that somebody was at the door. And then I've had deaf dog clients where the dog is asleep in the crate in a specific room, and before they wake up the dog, because the opening the crate itself would kind of startle the dog, so we instead switched to turning the lights on, and then the dog would usually wake up. We sometimes had to use some stinky treats, but lights can be really helpful too.
Oh my gosh, I just love all the information you have about deaf dogs. It's just, I think it really just makes me feel really optimistic about the future of so many deaf dogs out there, that all this information is now available. And I have to say, you're a pioneer, because this is really not too many people are learning to work with deaf dogs. So I just really want to be like, I am so grateful. I am so grateful to you. You really helped Blue, and you really helped us.
Well, I'm so grateful for the work that you guys do. It's definitely a difficult world out there for all of the rescuers and all of our dogs. And yeah, no, I'm just happy to provide these resources wherever I can. Yeah.
So where can our listeners find out more about you and your work? Website, social media?
Yeah, I run a business called Boss Babe Dog Training. Everything is pretty much the same, so it makes it simple. So bossbabedogtraining.com is our website, and then our Instagram handle is Boss Babe Dog Training, and our Facebook page is also Boss Babe Dog Training. So really easy to find us.
And you do virtual consultations, so someone could actually hire you no matter where they are in the world.
Yes. Yeah. I've worked with clients all over.
That's fabulous.
That's amazing.
Is that PPG webinar still available, or is there a webinar that somebody could still purchase?
I believe that it is still available, because I think that at the Pet Professional Guild, that we turned it into a webinar. So I believe it's available on their site.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Well, what a great resource for rescuers and adopters and just any guardian of a deaf dog. Yeah. Thank you so much, Tiffany. This is a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely.
Thanks for tuning in. If you liked this episode, don't forget to rate and review. It helps other folks like you find the show. Thanks to Mike Pesci for the original music and James Eade of Be Heard for production. For show notes and transcripts, visit podtotherescue.com. Let us know what you think about this episode on social media. We're at Pod to the Rescue on Facebook and Instagram, and we love connecting with listeners. We'll catch you next time on Pod to the Rescue. Oh, and tell your dog we said hi.